Who is your hero? Who is the person that you look up to more than anybody else? I remember when I was a young boy, my hero was Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, actually, interesting enough, has made the news as of recently for that plane crash. And the reason that Kobe Bryant was my hero is because around 11 years old, my dad wanted us to bond more. He was off to Germany for 2 years. He wanted us to bond more. And the first thing that he tried to get us to bond with was comic books. But I can tell you, I do not like reading. I did not like reading. I still don't like reading today. And it was too much reading for me. My dad said, "You have a real problem. If you like dislike reading so much, you can't even enjoy comic books, something is wrong with you." He was probably right. So comic books was out. Didn't work. So the next thing was sports, and since my dad had played basketball himself, then he got us into basketball. So here I am playing basketball. I really enjoyed basketball, and I wanted to be the greatest basketball player ever to live. You might not be surprised that this did not happen. I am 5'9". I'm not very fast, faster than people who don't run at all, but I'm not very fast, and my jump shot is not very good either. So it just wasn't going to happen. But back then I was 11. I didn't know that I was going to be 5'9". In fact, I prayed, "God, please, 6'6". It didn't happen. But as I think about that, though, and I think about as Kobe Bryant was my hero, I wonder what would have happened if I would have met Kobe Bryant, if I would have been in his presence. How would I have acted? I'm very glad I actually never met Kobe Bryant, because I probably would have blushed, probably been very giddy around him, treated him almost maybe like a god. Very inappropriate. I'm not in any way recommending celebrity worship, but I'm just saying, I hope you can understand 11, 12-year-old being around their hero and how they would treat their hero. What I certainly wouldn't have done is been disrespectful, mean, nasty. If you would have told me how to improve my jump shot, I would have listened. I wouldn't have assumed that I knew better than Kobe Bryant. And so the point of that illustration or that analogy is to recognize that the way that we view somebody will have a direct correspondence in the way that we treat that person. If we view them as a scrub or as a nobody, we very well might treat them as a nobody. But if we treat them with respect and dignity, if we view them that way, then we will treat them with honor. And that is true both in the physical realm and the ecclesiastical realm, as we will see in our passage. The key to proper treatment of an individual is a proper view of the significance of that individual. So please look to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 through 13. It's 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 and 13. We read there, "We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves." So a very short section of the scriptures here. So we can divide our passage into three headings. The first heading would be the charge for the believer. The second heading, the office of the elder. And the third, the perspective of peace. So the first is the charge of the believer, second, the office of the elder, and the third, the perspective of peace. So what is the charge that we are given as believers? Well, we see it right there. He starts off saying, "We ask you, brothers," people who have been redeemed by Christ, people who have equal status in the Lord in some sense. That's where he starts. We are all brothers. We're all one family in the Lord. But we ask you something, brothers, and what is that? To respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love because of their work. So there's two spheres, there's two aspects to this charge. The first is to respect. The second is to esteem. Now, the word translated here, respect, may be differently translated in your Bible. Sometimes it's respect, sometimes it's honor, sometimes it's to recognize. The actual word, if you have a King James Version, is to know. That's the actual word in the Greek. Now, before you think that all other translations are merely being liberal, the reason why the word respect here, or honor, or appreciate, or recognize is translated that way in various translations is because the word know, if you're just speed reading, you might think that this is merely talking about an intellectual knowledge of who your elders are. So in this case, for us, to know those who labor among you in the Lord would be simply to know the names of Jim and Neil. If you know their names, okay, you see it in the bulletin or whatever, then, all right, we're done, got it, check it off, and let's all go home. But that is not quite what it's talking about, the way respect, honor, recognize actually is correctly gathering this concept. We're to not just know facts, but we're to know the significance of those facts. So there's a difference in just simply to know something versus to know the significance of those things. And to illustrate that, I want you to imagine that there's a guy sitting there in the back of the room, and he has a whole bunch of young men around him. And then at the end of the service, you see him about to leave, but you decide, you know what, there's a new guy here. What should we all do? We should get out of our comfort zone. We should walk over them, be awkward, want to make them feel comfortable within the church and make them feel like they're welcome. So you go over there and introduce yourself and you say, hi, my name is so-and-so. And what's your name? And that individual says, my name is George. You say, hi, George. And you start talking and you guys hit it off. You realize this guy, George, seems to be a godly man and you have a great relationship with George. And at the end of the conversation, you slap George on the shoulder and says, you know, it's such a pleasure meeting you. You know, I hope you come back. And if you come back, why don't you come over to my house and we can have fellowship. We can have a fellowship meal. And you think, you feel good about yourself. You feel like, yeah, you know, I did my duty. I went over, talked to him. This guy's a great guy. He's going to be hopefully coming back and he'll be my friend. And then you go and talk to your buddy over here, and you notice that his jaw is dropped. He seems to be shocked. You're thinking, what are you shocked about? I mean, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to go introduce ourselves to people who come to our church. And your friend says, do you know who that man was? He's George. He's the guy who came there. He says, you know, that man is George W. Bush. And you just slapped the president. And now your jaw drops and think, I wonder why these Secret Service agents didn't kill me. Thank God for that. See, that illustration is supposed to help you to recognize that there's a difference between knowing facts, his name is George, he's come to your church, and he has men surrounding him, versus knowing the significance of those facts. His full name is George W. Bush. Those people surrounding him are Secret Service agents, and you're lucky they didn't take you out for putting your hand on the president. And here too, that's the kind of knowledge we're supposed to have over our elders. Not just to know their names, but to know the significance of who these men are and what God has charged of them. It says to know those who labor among you. So the first thing we're to know about these individuals is that they labor among you. Here we are as a family, a gathering. And there are some of us who labor in variously different ways. We just had a wonderful fellowship, and you hopefully have seen on display the various types of labor. All the people that made the food, all the people who set up, all the people who tore down. There's so much labor, and hopefully we have some appreciation for the labor that they have done. Hopefully we take the time, at least in our hearts, but maybe even on our lips, to thank you. Thank you for all the labor that you do. And I'll just say thank you. This is not possible without you all, so thank you. But we should recognize that there are certain people who labor among us. And if we should be thankful for the people who set up and tear down, the people who make food, all the extra work that comes along, how much more so should we be thankful for the work of the elders? That's what it's talking about. To recognize that there are some people who are not just in the flock, but regularly labor for the benefit of the flock. And that knowledge is supposed to build up, bubble up in us a sense of thankfulness and a sense of respect for who they are. And as we think about what exactly is the labor of the elder, does he just stand up occasionally or maybe often? Is that merely the work of an elder? Well, I think that no one fully understands the work of the elders except the elders and maybe their wives. But there is much work of the elder. And we do get some description of what the work of the elder is, and it's found in Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 14. So Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 14 says this, "Return, O faithless children, declares the Lord, for I am your master, and I will take you one from a city and two from a family, and I will bring you to Zion, and I will give you shepherds after my own heart who will feed you with knowledge and understanding." So to understand the significance of this passage and understand the identity of who the shepherds are, we just have to ask, well, who are the sheep? Who are the flock that are under these shepherds? Well, we get a description of them. They are people who were once referred to as faithless children. The Lord is described as their master and their people where God promises to take them, one from a city and two from a family, and he's to bring them to Zion. Now, this is not talking about people going on their bucket list and traveling to Jerusalem to see various sites in Israel. We know that because Jesus, when talking to the Samaritan woman, and the Samaritan woman says, where shall they worship, on this mountain or in Jerusalem? And Jesus says, neither. Now Christ would have us to worship in spirit and in truth. This is a prophecy of the new covenant. So the Zion here refers to the new heavenly Jerusalem. So these are people who are brought into the new heavenly Jerusalem. And you see that remnant principle when he says, I'll take you one from a city and two from a family. That many of us can probably look at our own families and see that happen. Especially if you're a first-generation Christian, you can see the fact that God has taken some of us and he has passed over the rest. Or even thinking about one from a city. We're more than one, but not in comparison to the total population of this city. We can see that this is an apt description of us. And so here is the flock of God that he promises that we will return to him and that he will take us, one from a city and two from a family. He's going to bring us to that heavenly Zion. But then it tells us that God says that he will give us shepherds after his own heart. Now, does anybody recognize where that phrase comes from? Does anybody recognize the allusion to after my own heart? What individual in the Bible was described after God's own heart? Hopefully you're thinking about an individual. His name is David. Acts 13:22 says, God raised up David to be their king, of whom he testified and said, I have found in David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all of my will. So David was a man after God's own heart, and then God promises that he's going to raise up shepherds after his own heart. Now, we think about David. Was he perfect? He was far from perfect. David did some things that we really shouldn't speak of in good company, or at least not go into details of what those things actually refer to. He did some pretty horrible stuff, some pretty criminal stuff. And yet, David is still described as a man after God's own heart. And so if David, an imperfect man, could be a man after God's own heart, so are the elders called to be men after God's own heart. We're not talking about perfection here. We're talking about faithfulness. It's easy to zoom into David's failings without zooming out to see David's overall faithfulness. David was an overall godly man day in and day out. Yes, he had his problems. Yes, he had his imperfections. But overall, he was, in fact, a godly man. And to kind of understand about David, just imagine. Imagine you're one of the best-looking people in all of in your generation. And imagine you have all the riches and all the money and all of the power, and you just slip up a little bit. You can cause some serious damage. And that's David's position. Most of us are not in that position. We may slip up and click on something inappropriate, but it's the same sin. We might slip up and say something. Too much anger, too much wrath, too much unforgiveness. But we haven't killed anyone, because it's a lot more difficult for us to do those things. For David, it was just as a click away. It was a letter away for him. So we need to recognize, before we're too critical of David, of the kind of responsibilities and the kind of opportunities that man had. And yet, even with all of that opportunity and all that responsibility, he wasn't doing this all the time. It was a slip up. But he had a pattern of godliness. And just in case we're wondering, is David really a godly man? Well, Acts 13:36 tells us without any question that he was. It says, for David, after he had served the purpose of God in his own generation, fell asleep and was laid with his fathers and saw corruption. What a commendation that we have here describing of David, that after he had served the purpose of God in his own generation, he fell asleep. And hopefully that will be the way that God can describe us in our lives, that we serve God and we serve the purpose of God in our own generation. We think about our tombstones. What do we want written on our tombstone? Here was a man who was worth $2 million. Is that your goal? Here was a man who was the most popular person at his work. Here was a man who obtained GS-14 status. I mean, what is it that you want on your tombstone? Because none of that will matter at all. It won't. But hopefully what you want on your tombstone, or at least what you want God to be able to describe of you when he summarizes your life is, here is a person who served the purpose of God in his own generation. This is the highest combination we could possibly want from God. And this is what David described us as, a man who served the purpose of God in his own generation. He served God's will. And these are the type of people that God raises up as our shepherds. Not perfect men, but godly men who will serve God and the purpose of God in their own generation, in their own sphere of influence. This doesn't just have to be true for the shepherds. This could be true for a whole variety of different vocations. Hopefully, we can be even church members who God will say, here is a person who served the purpose of God in his own generation. This should be the goal for all of us. But these are the type of men that God calls to be our shepherds, the people after his own heart. This idea of being not perfect but faithful can be seen on display in 1 Corinthians 11, 1, where Paul makes this very bold claim when he says, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. Can you imagine such a statement? Be an imitator of me as I follow Christ. That kind of statement should be really the way we all should be able to speak. But this is especially true for the elders. When we think about, what does a godly man look like? What does a man who's serving his family look like? You should be able to point to the elders and say, here's an imperfect but mature Christian. Not a perfect man, but an imperfect but mature Christian. And this is what it looks like to do family devotions. This is what it looks like to be faithful to his church. This is what it looks like to give. That is the expectation of the elders. And they should be able to say, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. Not perfection. Nobody was perfect except Jesus Christ. And he died on the cross to save us, to give us his perfect righteousness. We're not asking for perfection here, but we're asking for a biblical model. Could you imagine an elder exhorting you to do family disciple and family worship, and they themselves don't do it? We're not asking for perfection, but we're asking for holiness and for them to be a model of godliness for us. And so that's the office, that's the role of the elder, if you want to think of it that way. But it also says that they are to be people who feed you with knowledge and understanding. So these godly men are to feed us with knowledge and understanding. And they do this, the first way we already talked about is this idea of just showing us what it looks like to be a mature Christian. And just modeling that behavior in their own personal piety. The second way they feed us with knowledge and understanding is from the pulpit, is from the teaching ministry of the elders. This can be from the pulpit. This can be teaching Sunday school. This can be informal conversation. This can be counseling. A whole variety of means. But the elders should be feeding us with this knowledge and understanding and pointing us to Christ. And we should be thankful that they do this for us. See, because imagine, we have doctors even in our room, but just imagine there's a doctor out there and they're serving you, saving your life, or maybe saving the life of someone that you love. And after they've done their almost magical work of surgery and care and rescuing this person from almost certain death, how would you treat that doctor? I don't know, maybe talk to Ruby, see how people treat her. I'm not sure. But hopefully they treat her with some appreciation. Hopefully they have a little bit of a thank you. I really appreciate for you serving me and saving my life or saving the person's life that I love. You'd give some appreciation, some thankfulness. Well, that's the same way that we should treat the elders. We should be thankful for the service that they do because they keep us spiritually healthy. It's God is the one who has created the office of the elders to serve the church and to feed them with truth, to feed them with understanding so that we can stay on the right path. And so just as we have thankfulness for our physical doctors who take care of our physical bodies, so we should be thankful for our spiritual doctors who help us in our spiritual lives. There's a reason why God has created the institution of the church and created the institution of the Lord's Day. And there's a reason why we are here, and there's Christians all over the world gathering on the Lord's Day with elders preaching and teaching, because this is God's means of preserving you. Talk about perseverance of the saints. Well, how is God going to persevere you? Well, one of the ways is for him to call you to church and for him to call shepherds to feed you with truth and understanding. This is the main task of the elder. The main task of the elder is not to entertain you. It's not to come up here and tell jokes, make you feel good about yourself. Maybe that is a result of his ministry, but that's not the main task. The main task of the elder is to nurture you spiritually and to keep giving you good and nutritious meals. to point you to Christ and to point you to sound and healthy doctrine. That is their task. And when they do that faithfully, we should thank them and be appreciative to their ministry. So the first thing we're supposed to recognize about the elders is we need to recognize that they labor among us, and that labor is significant and worthy of appreciation. The second thing we see in our passage is we are to recognize that they are over us in the Lord. That's what it says. It says that they are over you in the Lord. Now, we're tempted to think, you know, but isn't there such thing as the priesthood of all believers? We're all equal around here, especially as Americans. Nobody can tell me anything is generally the attitude that we have. But it couldn't be more clear. You don't need a PhD. You don't need to look at the original languages. It's right there in front of you that the elders are over you in the Lord. Yes, we're all priests, but that description is saying that you don't need another man to connect you to God, because you already have that man, and that man is Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is your direct connection to God. You don't need to go to a priest in order to get connected to God. And that's what it means that we're all this universal priesthood of believers. But what it doesn't mean is that we don't have rightful leadership within the church. We do. There are, in fact, legitimate authority in the church, just like there's legitimate authority in the family. I see husbands and wives here. I see parents in here. I see people who are even very powerful in their organizations here. There is lawful authority within the world, and there's lawful authority in the family, and there's lawful authority in the church. If you're a parent, you don't want your kids disrespecting you. You need to tell them, you better recognize, God put me over you, and you need to treat me as such. Right? That's what we would expect from our children. And likewise, if we are managers or we have some authority at our work, we don't just let our subordinates walk all over us. We say, you better recognize. You don't just come and tell me you're going on leave. You request that you're going on leave. And I'll tell you if you can. I'm not talking about abuse here. I'm talking about legitimate respect. Legitimate authority and respect. God has called certain people to have authority and certain people to have respect. The same thing we have with our government. There are officers, ministers, as Romans says, of the civil government, and we are to respect them. And likewise here with the church. Now, we've all seen abuse of this. People who have lorded it over us. People who have been bullies and mean and nasty, and we don't support that at all. We're not suggesting that people can mistreat you. There is no lawful authority that can mistreat you, whether they're your boss, whether they're your mom, your dad, or anything else. Either they're your pastor and they're abusing you, they are still lawful authority, but they're acting unlawfully. And then we can appeal to a greater authority above them to correct their misbehavior. But we ought to recognize that there are people who are legitimately over us in the Lord. And God has done this. God has appointed them to be over us in the Lord for our good. Not to harm us. Not to be mean and nasty to us. But actually to shepherd us and to take care of us. The last thing we're to know about the elders is it says right here that they are to admonish you in the Lord. Now the word to admonish is to correct. Now, this is a very difficult task for the elders. Nobody wants to admonish anybody. Admonishing is painful. To go around and telling people the hard truth, telling people that they need to square up and get in line, is going to be very unpleasant. The only people who like to admonish people are bullies. There are some bullies and mean, nasty people who just like to jab people and punch people. Okay? I think we all know that our elders are not bullies. If they are, they would be completely unqualified for the eldership. In fact, in 1 Timothy 3:17, we get these qualifications for the office of elders. It says, this saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of an overseer, he desires a noble task. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent, but gentle and not quarrelsome. So you see, three of the qualifications of elders disqualify bullies. They are not to be violent, but gentle. They're not to be quarrelsome, and they're to be self-controlled. So if you have a bully for an elder, he's not qualified to be an elder at all. But if he meets this requirement, then he's certainly not a bully. And that means, since only bullies like to admonish people, that means your elders don't want to admonish you. You catching my drift here? They don't want to admonish you, but God admonishes them to admonish you. So that means it's going to be difficult and challenging for them to do this. But this helps us so that when we're on the other side of this admonishment, We recognize they don't want to do it. And thus we should react appropriately. We should understand they don't want to do this as much as you don't want to be admonished. But they are doing this because God's telling them to do this for your good. And yes, it is going to be unpleasant. Yes, it's going to be painful. But God is calling them to do that. God is calling us to be disciplined. We see that famous passage in Hebrews 12:7 tells us that God disciplines all those whom he loves. And that if he doesn't discipline you, you're an illegitimate child. And it even says that we respect earthly fathers who discipline us. How much more can we not respect our heavenly father who disciplines us? Well, how does God discipline you? He can discipline you a whole bunch of ways. He can give you diseases. He can take away things that you're clinging onto. In many other ways. But one way that he can do is he can send the elder after you to come whack you when you need to be whacked. When he does that, though, remember, they don't want to do it. So give them a little bit of charity. Give them a little bit of a break and understand this is uncomfortable for everybody, but God has called them to do this, and they're just trying to be faithful to the Lord. I can tell you an example of this. I've been whacked many times. I've been whacked by people who've had this pulpit. One of the person who whacked me a lot was our pastor, Shane. And it hurt. It did not feel good. But I needed those whackings. And I'm very, very thankful for that. I really am. It didn't feel pleasant at the time, but overall I grew. He was a godly man, and I thank him for that. So I just encourage you, as you get whacked sometimes, not abuse. I'm not talking about abuse. If you're getting abused, you need to call the police. You need to call the elders. You need to let people know. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about legitimate sin in your life, and a brother or sister is coming to you and telling you, you need to square up. You need to recognize that this is coming from love and to recognize that God is blessing you through that human instrument. So we need to respect those who labor among us, the elders, because they labor, because they serve us. They spend their time, they spend their money, they spend their talents trying to bless us and to feed us. We're to recognize that they are actually over us in the Lord and that they have real spiritual authority. We're to recognize that they are called to admonish us, and when they admonish us, we are to receive it properly, knowing that it comes from God as long as it's done in a godly fashion and not an abusive fashion. So that's what we are to know. And in light of this knowledge, it tells us later on our passage that we are to esteem them very highly and love because of their work. Knowing that this is their office and this is their task, this should result in us a high esteem for their work. As we think about the office of elders, how many of us, I don't want to see hands, how many of us want that office? Some of you might say, absolutely not. I don't want anything to do with that. I'm so glad you do that, but I don't want to do that. Now, some of you actually might want to be an elder. And if you do, 1 Timothy says something to you. This is a trustworthy saying. If anyone aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. So if you want the task of elder, then God might very well be raising you up for that task. But for many of us, we have no desire to be an elder whatsoever. And if that's you, then that's fine. But then you're called to support the eldership. So you're called to be thankful for them, to say, I'm so glad God called you to do this. And so now my task is to help you do your task and to serve you and support you and to pray for you. We're not to have bad reactions toward them. We're not to slander them and to tear them to pieces, act like they're not actual human beings. They are human beings. They have feelings just like the rest of us. They feel unappreciated just like the rest of us. So we should thank them and to try to be there for them. It's a difficult task. It's a difficult responsibility. But God has called them and equipped them for that means, and God has called us and equipped us to support them, and that is what we should do. One of the bad reactions to discipline would be slander, would be to talk about them behind their backs, things like that. And if we are to do that, we have a word from God in Psalm 105, verse 15. It says, touch not my anointed ones and do them no harm. We need to be careful if we attack lawful authority and the shepherds God has given us in his church. It's a difficult task, but God has equipped them, and we should be people who esteem them and respect them and recognize all that they do for us. The last thing we see in our passage, it says at the very end, it says, be at peace among yourselves. What is this? Why is this here? It almost feels out of place. What does this have to do with the office of eldership and our call to respect and to esteem them? Well, I think the reason that this is here is because this is the great obstacle for us to fulfill this command. Maybe some of you don't like this sermon. Maybe some of you don't even like the idea that there is spiritual leadership. Something naturally bristles against that. We're all equal, you want to scream. There was a guy who liked that in the Bible. His name was Korah. He rebelled. And God cursed him. And he swallowed him up. There's always that temptation for us to rebel against lawful leadership. In fact, some of us don't even like submitting to God, let alone a man, and an imperfect man at that. But we are called to submit ourselves to the yoke of God, to submit ourselves to the yoke of lawful authority, whether civil or ecclesiastical. And here is the great remedy, or the great perspective and attitude for us to obey this. Be at peace among yourselves. The thing that naturally causes us to bristle against this is a spirit of strife, a spirit of wanting to fight and combat and to be overly critical and negative. See, everyone likes the elders until they tell you something you don't like. And then all of a sudden, the sheep turn into wolves and they bite. No, that's not to be the way that we are. We are to be at peace among ourselves, to have a spirit of peace. God says in 1 Corinthians 14:33, "For God is not a God of confusion, but a God of peace." God created his church, which is his institution for advancing his kingdom, right? As we think about missions and we want God's mission to expand on the earth, what are we trying to do? We're trying to plant churches. So the gospel expands by planting churches. And how is the ground that we've already conquered, how is that maintained? By the maintenance of the church. And who is the one who maintains the church? It's all of us. It's the congregation and, namely, the elders. This is God's way to keep confusion from happening and instead having peace. And so we are to recognize that, and so we are to be at peace among ourselves and to maintain the peace that God has given us. Matthew 5:9 says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." This is a description of the believer. We are people who are peacemakers. As we see strife, if we see people slandering, if we see people causing all kinds of division, we should rebuke them in love. And we should definitely, if we are doing that, we should repent of that and say, "I am not a troublemaker. I am a man of peace. I'm a woman of peace. I am a peacemaker. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." We are called to be peacemakers because we serve him who is the Prince of Peace. Jesus Christ is the one who is the ultimate author of peace. He has given us peace with God, and he's given us peace with our neighbor. He gives us the ability to submit to fallen human beings in all of their various offices, including that of the office of elder. Ephesians 4:3 says, "Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace." It's interesting. Through the bond of peace. Christ has already earned the bond of peace between us and God and us and our neighbor. And we are to, in light of that peace that he has given us, racially, ethically, all across the board, because he has given us such peace, we are to make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit, to keep that peace, to recognize that God has given us peace, he's given us a church, he's blessed us in so many profound ways, and the elders are so important for that task. Let me say one last thing about the elders. Because they are just such a high and lofty task, we should be very careful who we appoint as elders, right? We don't want those bullies. We don't want people who are unfaithful. We don't want people who are going to do false doctrine. Paul says to be very quick, very slow, should I say, to lay on hands. So be very slow. Yes, God has called for peace. Yes, God has called lawful authority, but be careful who you put in that lawful authority, because you don't want to put someone who one day has to be taken down. And if the elders ever need to be taken down, that's when the congregation needs to rise up and to take them down, because they are being unfaithful. But we need to be very slow to do that as well and make sure you're not just mad at them, but they're actually being unbiblical and they're no longer qualified for that office. So in light of all that, please join me in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father God, we thank you for the office of elders. We thank you that you have given us lawful authority. We thank you for these men who are shepherds after your own heart, imperfect as they are. God, we ask that you help us to submit to them. You help us to recognize the difference between admonishment and abuse. You help us to recognize the difference between attacking people for being imperfect and people who are generally actually unqualified for the office. God, please protect this church through your shepherds and through the congregation. In Jesus' name.